So this is Mechanical Vibrations, Mechie 45. Hopefully that's why you're all here. I'm Dr. Vaughn. I see a lot of familiar faces this time. So basically, I think some of you have seen this already. We'll go through it quickly. I'm from Southern Virginia. Been here a little over 6 years now. Came 2012. My degrees are actually undergraduate degrees. Are from Hampden-Sydney College, small school in Virginia, and actually a physics and applied math undergrad degrees. Played baseball at this small school. That's kind of how I ended up there, with always the intention of coming to be an engineer. So grad school was on my path from kind of the beginning. So did okay there. I think physics and math at a small liberal arts college is actually a great preparation for graduate school. Pretty much set yourself up to destroy the GRE if you do that. So was able to get into a pretty good grad school. Went to grad school at Georgia Tech. Got lucky and ended up in a lab of a pretty good advisor, Dr. Singhose. Was actually a national champion decathlete, two-time national champion decathlete when he was at MIT. So he's kind of a freak of nature athlete. So he was a real athlete. I just pretended to be one as an undergraduate. So pretty good group. Actually, my master's degree I got 2004. And it's also mentioned in here because it's relevant to some of the things we'll be talking about in this class. Okay. So I worked on the active and semi-active control to counter vehicle payload variation. So what does that mean? So basically, we looked at suspension design. And suspension design for vehicles whose payload varies a lot, or the system mass varies a lot, so a dump truck, front-end loaders, those type of vehicles. What we tried to do is actively change the suspension parameters. So we had an actively controlled suspension that tried to kind of make the vehicle behave better, if you will, all the time. All right, so a dump truck that's full behaves much, much differently than a dump truck that's empty, right? And that's really hard for new novice operators to get used to. Okay, so our attempt was to use these active suspension, actually sensing the road conditions in real time to be able to change suspension parameters, also being able to sense our payload. Okay, so did that, and actually Dr. Singhose's mom was a dump truck driver, so it was kind of his interest in that project. My PhD work actually shifted over to crane control, so dynamics and mobile cranes. So we'll talk a lot about cranes in here, in this class, because they're a great example of an oscillatory vibratory system, right? They're a pendulum, right, at the simplest. We can understand how cranes move around, how cranes work, by understanding high school version of a pendulum, actually. Okay? And then we can add complexity to that as the semester goes, look at it in more detail. And we should be able to get to a simple example of that today. Did a postdoc in Japan, so that's kind of how I got into the robotic stuff. Kind of a lot of the research I have that we're doing here kind of comes out of the combination of my PhD work and this postdoc, applying controls ideas in the robotics domain. The lab I worked with, Professor Hirose, super smart guy, probably best known for these snake-type robots like the one you see here. This is one of their most recent versions. He's actually working at a startup company that we do some research with now. In Japan, if you work at a public university, you're forced to retire at 65. You have no choice at all. So he retired and now is working for a company that had spun out of his lab doing the research stuff there. So that's a pretty cool video of him with his initial robot. He won't give it to me. Initial snake robot in 1972 or something like that, 72, 73. Snake robot about a meter long like this one, but then the cart of all the electronics to power it is about the size of this table, and he's pushing it behind it. So you go from 72 to, this is probably 2015, they designed this version. All that now fits inside this robot. What's cool about snakes is actually their control in the water is actually pretty similar to how it's controlled on land. So if you're able to watertight, make all the components watertight, you actually get kind of amphibious operation for free from the control side. Okay. And the way most of this controls is done is basically you have one kind of master link, usually the first one, and then all the links after that are just looking at the one ahead of it and the one behind it and acting on those two. So we can extend this out. We can make this guy longer if need, if the application calls for it, make it shorter, and the controls doesn't really change that much. Since we're talking controls, how many of you guys have had controls or in controls right now? All of you. How many of you have had controls already? Most of you. Good. Okay. So that's good. What we'll be doing, I come to this vibration stuff from the controls perspective. Right. So we'll be kind of reviewing some of that control stuff and seeing how it applies in that domain as well. So maybe serve as a nice review. And what you'll see is there's quite a lot of overlap between the two. Right? So we'll deal in transfer functions for some part of the class, which hopefully you saw in controls. And then since you've all had controls, we'll probably tack on a little bit of controls, vibration-specific control methods as a kind of extra little piece. Okay, so that was some of Hirose's work. This is actually some work I did at Georgia Tech, and I mentioned cranes because we'll talk about cranes a lot. So this is a particular 10-ton bridge crane. There's about 4 meters of cable up above that hook. And it's a pretty simple crane move. Move it over, and then kind of move it into the board and set it down. And you see, even at this kind of relatively low speed, things can start swinging around quite a lot. State-of-the-art crane control in most factories out there is move really, really slow and have 4 or 5 of your buddies come hang on to whatever you're trying to move. All right. That's obviously not efficient. So we developed this crane controller, same crane 30 seconds later with the controller turned on. Same max velocity, same max acceleration. We can obviously do a lot better. And really what that controller is all about is understanding the vibration properties of that crane and its payload. So we'll get some skills, and we'll actually touch on this. The core kind of theoretical principles behind that controller are covered in chapter 3 of your book, actually. So we'll talk about those then. So that particular example had primarily one mode of oscillation. There was one frequency at which it oscillated, right? That simple pendulum, right? You get certain crane payloads, you get more than that. So this particular crane payload, same crane at Georgia Tech, just different kind of camera angle. In this case, there's only about 3 meters of cable up to the crane bridge. And then we have this long payload rigging down to actually just some plates from the gym, 25-pound plates. And in this particular configuration, when the plates here and the hook are about the same mass, you get this kind of string-type vibration too. So you get multi-mode oscillation, we say. So the single degree of freedom stuff is chapter 1 and 2 for you guys, for us this semester. This multi-degree of freedom, multi-mode oscillation is chapter 4 and beyond. And we'll get to both. Okay. So in this move, you'll be able to see that multi-mode oscillation. You'll be able to see not just the pendulum, overall pendulum move, but you'll see in some, once it gets moving, in a lot of places the payload and hook are moving in opposite directions. That's that second mode of oscillation, the higher frequency mode, we say. So here's actually a trial we did. We were studying crane operators, how well they were able to control cranes with and without our controller. Prize on the line here, takes over almost 4 minutes for this student to position the payload in the circle. Turn on our controller, which I guess we're not going to show, and he does it in 11 seconds. Okay. So again, but it's mainly that control method. The core of most controls work is understanding the dynamics of the system you're trying to control. Some more work we've done here recently with cable-driven parallel manipulators. You guys know the SkyCam at football games? That's probably the most famous example of these right now. Right. So here's my football field, here's my SkyCam, and I'm taking video of the game. Okay. So what we do is trying to use these type of systems, these CDPMs, for work other than taking pictures of football. Okay. So for example, the company I mentioned in Japan, we have a project with them where they're doing bridge inspection. Who knows how bridge inspection is done right now? Yeah, manually. Basically, you hang somebody underneath or you scaffold up to the bottom of the bridge or something like that, depending on the type of bridge. It's obviously kind of dangerous. There's a lot of folks trying to use drones for it. But there are places on bridges where you can't get with a drone. You need to really inspect. Okay. And the weather conditions you operate a drone in close enough to the bridge to be able to inspect it are also somewhat limited. So basically, the company we work with, unfortunately, I can't show you photos because they won't let me, basically have a mechanical system that they designed they can set up in under 30 minutes to hang a SkyCam effectively underneath a bridge. Right. And these cables in their application can be 50 to 100 meters long. Right. So you're trying to move the system around with strings, basically. Right. So vibration becomes a big problem. In addition, what's kind of cool about their design is that middle part, rather than the SkyCam and kind of having a camera gimbal and everything there to take nice steady pictures, we need to be able to reach up towards the bridge and reach in the overhangs and crevices and things like that. And we're doing basically video photographic inspection. Right. But you can imagine I have all these cables Oh, and it's a very small base, and I can reach up to 3 meters of this extendable actuator with the camera on the end of it. So I get not just the vibration maybe from trying to control the platform itself and the cables themselves flexing and the bridge bouncing up and down because we do it while traffic is going across. I also have this inverted pendulum that I'm trying to control to take pictures. So it ends up being a very, very complex controls problem, but basically vibration control at the heart of it. So CPMs, we have a small kind of lab scale one of these and just a planar case. We're also working with them. They have a project with the Singapore government for inspection of high-rises. Inspection, painting, window cleaning, and skyscrapers. So you can imagine hanging a SkyCam on the side of a building. Now you can run the SkyCam up and down the building, clean the windows, things like that, so the people hanging outside the building, 50 stories up or whatever. So what we have is kind of a version of that. Our cables in that lab scale one are not long enough where they flex enough to cause trouble. So we add this pendulum to stand in for those flexible dynamics. And we're able to use that same kind of control method that we talked about for cranes to control this system. So the first moves you see there are without that controller. Again, we just click it on, same exact system 30 seconds later. We apply that idea called input shaping, and we're able to move that around. And you see the pendulum part is not oscillating, basically. We're not trying to control the plate rocking in this case. We could, though. So another place where we're looking at vibration and oscillation, in this case, we're trying to use vibration to our advantage, is walking robots. So most robots walk around right now, and they effectively just stomp their feet, right? Move really rigidly. You see, most robots actually walk with kind of bent knees always. None of us really walk like that. That's to absorb ground impact and allow them to be more stable. Okay. Well, we absorb ground impact, we're kind of flexible, right? There's some kind of pliance in how we walk. And that's particularly true when we start running and doing more athletic things, running and jumping. Right? We use our muscles as energy stores. We use our muscles as springs as much as we use them as actuators to drive our motion in those particular cases. Until very, very recently, no robots in the world worked that way. Okay. So there's some now, and a lot of the ones now try to actually add compliance, add flexibility in line with the actuation. It's a type of actuator called a series elastic actuator. So you drive one end of a spring, and the other end of that spring is actually the output. Right? There's some advantages to that. Turns out that setup's kind of expensive, though. So we want to enable that similar idea for kind of simple or cheaper robots. So this particular walking robot is in our lab. It's actually some master's work done by Ms. Kutze, our instructor, if you've had her. So she designed initial iteration of these legs, basically making the legs of this little walking robot flexible. And the idea is to harness the footfall energy and use it in the next stride. So basically, it's trying to tune the natural frequencies of that leg segment so that it times up with our walking. Okay. So just those initial changes, this little guy walks about 15% faster with the initial work that Ms. Kutze did. We also have a version of this that jumps, right? With rigid legs, it won't leave the ground. With the flexible legs, we actually can kind of maximize the vibration of those flexible legs. It's kind of a controls problem. We jump about 2 inches. It's infinitely better, right? If we're not jumping without it. So we have work. My reason I show all this is to kind of give you some applications, hopefully frame what we're going to talk about this semester. And we're going to try to do that throughout the entire semester, is always come back to, we're really describing physical things here. It's not just textbook problems. It's not just equations on a board, right? The equations we're writing are describing these things. Right? And I think that will help you as you're modeling systems, as you're working on the modeling part of this class, which is a big part, to always keep that in mind. Right? So, another place this all comes up. This one's not mine. Here's a bridge. I think it's in Germany. I was having trouble oscillating as people walked across it. And it was such that the natural frequency of this bridge was kind of timed up to the footfall natural frequency of people walking. So excitation closely matched the natural frequency. What do you think happens then? Well, what you just saw, right? You get high amplitude vibration. Okay. Well, that's obviously not good for the structure. It was also not good for people walking across it. It's really uncomfortable. Okay. So what these guys designed, a particular company, And these systems are really common. I'll get there in a second. It is a supplementary system. It's kind of hard to see here. My projector's not so good. There's actually just a little box here they designed to put on there. And it's completely passive in this case. So it's called a vibration absorber. So we'll add the supplementary system to an oscillatory system, and all that excitation energy now goes into this absorber system rather than to the main system. These guys are everywhere if you start looking for them. You look at power lines, there's those little kind of T-shaped thing at each end of a next to the tower. It's called Stockbridge dampers. They're not really a damper, they're a vibration absorber. And the oscillatory excitation energy going into that the power line actually excites that little damper, Stockbridge damper, instead of the power line itself. We'll learn about this in chapter 4. This is a multi-degree of freedom, multi-mode oscillatory system. You'll learn how to design these things. It's actually pretty simple. The theoretical part of it, at least. Okay? You also see these. If you go to grad school, maybe do some vibration work. Go to a vibration conference presenting your research, you're going to see a lot of earthquake researchers. How do we design buildings to withstand earthquakes? Right? Not such a problem here, but a big problem in a lot of the world. Right? So here's a small-scale setup in a lab. There's a shake table here. We have kind of a three-story building, if you will. Okay? And buildings are flexible. Right? And you start shaking the table to kind of simulate something like an earthquake. And you'll see the building start shaking. And that can be pretty bad if you're up here. Anybody ever been in an earthquake? It's a really unsettling feeling, isn't it? The ground's not supposed to move. So we can add a vibration absorber to this building. And they put one up here. Same shake, same building. And now all that earthquake energy goes into moving this mass, not the building, not the flexibility of the building. Okay. And you say, oh, well, that's cool, but hey, I can't put that big mass in a real building. Oh, sure, you can. Taipei 101 actually made it an architectural feature of their building. So up at the top here, you'll see that there's this kind of hanging mass in the observation deck. And it acts just like the video you just saw. So I was able to find, so it looks like, kind of cool looking. It's, like I said, it's part of the observation platform up there. And I found some video of somebody that was up there in a mild earthquake. And you can see it start swinging. So these things work. You'll see some folks, you know, that put them up in the top of the building. You can put them in the bottom of the building as well. So you'll see a lot of buildings will have something like this, not quite the same design, in the basement. So, vibration absorbers, chapter 4. Okay. Modern wings, another nice flexible thing. We'll get through that one kind of quickly. Right, so think about an airplane wing. When it's on the ground, the landing gear is supporting the entire weight. When it's flying, the wing is supporting the entire weight of the fuselage. Right? So these wings are under kind of quite a bit of force, and they flex a lot. And it's a part of modern airplane design. That flexibility is designed into the wing. Right? The kind of old planes, those wings were designed to be pretty rigid. Right? Modern planes, this is Boeing 787, are not designed that way. They account for the flex. You can use this flex to your aerodynamic advantage, actually. It's kind of cool. And if you've flown, of course, you've seen wings bouncing around. Okay. So, course info. We're going to do vibration stuff, right? So the official description, analytical and laboratory investigations, blah, blah, blah. Right? Prerequisites are, what's that, dynamics, differential equations, and that's what, numerical methods type, math method? That, yeah, right? Okay? So make sure you've had those if you're here. I think our system's getting better at not letting you sign up if you don't have those. I will still take, hopefully I can stop after this semester, a prereq form from you guys signing that you did take it. Okay, so that's posted on the class website, which we'll get to in a minute. You're going to need to get that to me by next Friday via PDF, instructions and everything are on there. Okay, good to it. So that's the official description. Unofficially, basically, we're going to look at systems that vibrate, like all the ones you just saw, and try to distill out the important properties of them. Right. So, for example, the crane. Depending on what we want to do with the crane, what's important to our application changes. Right, for most of what we want to work on, what we're doing with the crane, the pendulum mode is what matters. Right? We don't care that the actual cable itself can oscillate. That's not significantly contributing to the payload oscillation. So we kind of ignore that. It's not an important property for our particular application. So that's one thing that we're going to try to stress throughout this semester is you're modeling physical systems. One, we've already talked about that. Two, every one of those models you make in your entire career is going to be wrong. Every model you make is wrong. Okay? What matters is it wrong enough to matter for your application? So you have to have some skill and understanding to be able to determine that, right? Beyond just follow a procedure. Okay. We're meeting Tuesdays and Thursdays. You made it here. That's good. The book is by this guy, Benson Tong. It's the second edition. I apologize about the price. It seems like it's gone up quite a bit in the last year. Textbooks in general are too expensive. I understand that. But I think it's a pretty good book. I think it's written well. It's actually a book that you can read. It's not just a book of equations. Okay? And I would recommend that you supplement what we do in class with reading the book. Hear it from someone besides me. Okay? I post the notes. Yes, everything you need is not in those notes. And you're going to need to look at the book too. Okay? Class website's there. I think at this point, probably if you just Google Mekki 485 Louisiana, you probably get there. Office hours. I haven't kept set office hours 2 to 3 every Wednesday or whatever. I'm kind of always here. If you need help, just come knock on my door. I might ask you to come back, but knock on my door. My door will physically be closed most times because of where my office is. People will come look over my shoulder for 5 minutes before saying anything, which creeps me out. So I keep my door closed, but just not. I'm there most times. It's figuratively closed or literally closed, figuratively open. All times I'm here. Just give a knock. That said, if you know you need a longer meeting, hey, I didn't get anything we talked about in lecture last week. Right, that's going to be a longer meeting. Bounce me an email. We can set up a time and make sure I have the time available for you. Okay. Let me help you. All right. Mention that prereq form. It is linked from this site. Okay. It's due by email to me by Friday, next Friday, 25th, 5 p.m. Okay. That's going to count as of a homework grade for you to get that to me. And instructions on how to submit that, and name files and stuff, are on the sheet itself. Questions so far? All right. Part of being a modern engineer, even a modern mechanical engineer, is being able to simulate the system you're talking about, being able to interface with modern engineering design tools. This includes writing some code, possibly. Okay. So we're going to leverage the scientific Python ecosystem. Pretty much everything we need is going to be part of this Anaconda Python distribution. We're going to give you one link you can go to, and it's going to get everything for you. What's nice about this is that it's free and open source. I'm not asking you to buy any software. You don't have to go buy MATLAB or get an academic license for this semester or anything like that. Okay? This is free. In particular, we're going to utilize NumPy, Numeric Python, SciPy, Scientific Python, SymPy, Symbolic Python, and Matplotlib, so is the plotting. Okay. We're going to leverage all these things through a tool called a Jupyter Notebook. Okay. That should be why. Jupyter Notebook, there are already about 30 of these posted in the class's GitHub repository. All the core topics of the lecture have GitHub associated GitHub Jupyter Notebooks. Jupyter Notebooks on GitHub. Plots, there are a number of ones that are interactive. If you run them, get this and figure out how to run them locally, you can change sliders and see how responses change and how models change and everything like that. There's another thing in addition, you know, take my notes that I'm going to publish for you. Take the book. Take a look at these two. Right? And then we'll be writing a little bit of Python, and probably writing is a bit of a strong word. I'm going to give you most of it. And you're going to look at it, change parameters, add stuff. For some of these projects. Okay. We're going to utilize, we have a small scale crane down in my lab. It's This is about 2 meters tall. Right. So we're going to leverage some experimental equipment I have in my lab. You saw the CDPM earlier. So we'll be using this for examples. We're going to have some mini projects later in the semester. We're going to get to interact with these systems. And we actually might have some additional equipment coming, waiting for the final word on that. My contact info, I'm in 225. Email address, if you want to follow me on Twitter, that's kind of the professional account. I'll tweet there always when I post the notes here. I'll email you guys after today, since it's the first time. I won't spam you every time I post lecture notes after that, but I will post it. Right? You won't, if there's anything critical to the class, I'll email the class list. So whatever email address is in ULink for you, that's the one you need to be checking for class information. But you might want to check that out if you random engineering stuff for the most part. And then all the projects, most of the projects I just talked about are also on my kind of lab's website, which is there. Okay. Our tentative schedule. Today is our course introduction, and we're going to get through a little bit of dynamics review. Okay. Today will be the only day of dynamics review. If you don't remember dynamics, pull out your Hibbler book and go to work. All right. I'm happy to answer questions you have. We're not going to cover that in this class. Okay. This is not a dynamics class. This is a vibrations class. All right. We're going to move forward, and we're going to move forward fairly rapidly. All right. That said, I will say there is a pretty high correlation between those that do well in this class and those that understand the modeling, which is kind of based in dynamics. Right, look, the modeling we're going to do is kind of a subset of what you guys did in dynamics, largely. Okay, chapter one is really about that modeling and free vibration. So I have no external forces acting in my system. Chapter two, we get into forced vibration of single degree of freedom systems. And chapter two, as you see, will take about the first half of the class, the bulk of the first half of the class. Okay. Midterm exam at the end of February. Now, we'll note, it's on every page here. There's a PDF version of this linked already from the class website that has Friday also there, which is what most of your homeworks and things like that are going to be due, Friday at 5 p.m. All submitted electronically. I don't need any paper from you guys except your in-class exams. Right. So that's January, February. We get through Chapter 2. Probably we'll have a little bit of Chapter 2 left after Mardi Gras break. Chapter 3 goes quickly, and then Chapter 4 is kind of the most of the second half of the class. That's effectively the Chapter 2 stuff, but now we have more than one mode of oscillation to worry about, more than one degree of freedom to worry about. This is a class, just to warn you, that builds on what you do. Right? This is not a very siloed class where what I learn in Chapter 1 I can forget after I've been tested on that. Right? Chapter 2 builds on Chapter 1. Chapter 3 builds on Chapter 1 and 2, etc. Right, so just keep that in mind. I have, let's see, this week of May, this is exam week. Our exam is, I think, first thing Friday morning. And the schedule is posted right now. So we'll keep an eye on that. Those have a tendency to change sometimes. But we'll double check that. Okay. Again, PDF versions up with tentative homework, deadlines and things like that already posted. Questions about our schedule? Okay. Grading. So, we have 10% from your homework. We have a homework due about every two-ish weeks. Okay. This is probably the minimum set of problems you need to be working. I'm not in the business of beating you over the head with homework problems. I'm going to sample homework problems. These are the type of problems you need to know the information for. Okay, I'll get those from you. I'll post solutions to those. It's in your best interest to work more than that. Okay, we'll submit PDFs, and we'll include some simulation code. Homework grading is more or less on effort. Right? Did you do the problems? Are you in the right ballpark? Okay, so I do that. There's a couple of reasons I do this. One, I don't want big stacks of paper. Two, also I get submissions electronically, I can post the solutions right away, and you can check your paper copy against the electronic version immediately. You don't have to wait for me to get stuff back to you. Okay. So I'll do that, and then basically for every homework assignment, each problem is kind of pass-fail. Did you make an effort and get pretty close, or you at least in the ballpark on the problem. Okay. So you got five problems. You do, you know, say the homework has five problems, and you worked four of them and gave up on the fifth one. You probably got like an 8 out of 10. Right. It's pass fail. You failed the last. Okay. Again, that's kind of for you, right? Check my solutions versus what you did. And 10%. We have two midterms that are equally weighted, as you saw. So midterms are about 20% each, or are 20% each. And you saw their schedule already. We have some mini projects we'll do that are total to 20%. And then we'll have a final exam that's 30%. So I think pretty standard for an upper level or graduate type class. You don't have 15 tests. You've got two midterms and a final. Questions about that? Okay. Some grading trends. You're wondering how this all shakes out. Excuse me. This is all the times I've taught this class. Looks like it's the 8th this time through. So you see, it's kind of hard to fail. It's also pretty hard to get an A. I think that's kind of how my classes tend to be in general. So take a look at that. Make sure you get stuff done, you're making the effort, all right? And you'll see kind of, here's also all the times I've taught it. So this chart, what it's showing, we have homework average on this axis. So 0, somebody didn't turn in any homework way down there. Turned in all the homework, got perfect scores on all of it. Okay? We have midterm average, 0 to 100, and then final exam. And then the colors here are A, B, C, D, F. The size of the circle also scales with final, normalized final grade. So you kind of get an idea. This somewhat makes sense, right? It's probably what you'd expect to see in a class. People that did homework and did a good job on it and did a good job on the midterms and did a good job on the final end up with A's. You will notice, however, that kind of things are grouped this way. So folks that do better on the homework are doing better on midterms and finals. Okay, so one thing I'm going to stress as well throughout the semester, and this might sound familiar for those of you that have me for 201, I'm going to ask you to be responsible for your own learning. As we're all upper level students at this point, I'm not going to hold your hand through any of this. I feel like my job is to help you learn this stuff. I can't just hand it to you and you know it. So that takes you being responsible for your own learning. And I will help you along. That means if you have a question, ask it. I know I'm kind of lecturing right now. You'll see once we start doing kind of chalk and talk style, it'll be more of a discussion. So ask questions, participate in that in lecture. Right? Have a question, ask. The other thing, and I stress this because I was terrible at this, try to really understand what we're talking about, not just memorize the methods. I was really good at this, which resulted in getting pretty good grades for most of my career, right? But I had to play catch up as a result. My understanding, core understanding of some topics was not where it should have been when I started my grad school, basically. Right? I try to tailor my test along this way too, right? Where I'm trying to measure not how well you can regurgitate a method, but what do you really understand about vibrations? So I don't think I have to say this, but just in case, be respectful of yourself and others in the class. If you look at our class syllabus, we also have a class code of conduct that by sitting in this class, you're implicitly agreeing to. Please take a look at that. If you don't agree with it, come to my office. I will try to convince you that you should be agreeing with it. All right. And it's basically this point here. Okay. So please do take a look at that. Review it. If you have questions, have comments, objections to it, set up a time to come see me. We'll talk about it. Okay, questions? I'm highly suspicious of no questions. You'll see that throughout the turn. None at all. All right. So in that case, what we can do is start reviewing some dynamics.